Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. We are supposed to be interviewing today, or not even interviewing, Reginald Clemens, a prisoner in Missouri DOC, who has been running the Monday shows at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. However, last week, Reginald didn't show up to do the show. We did it without him, and we were hoping that he would be calling in today, because if not, I won't be doing his shows anymore. I don't know if it's something to do with the prison or what, because the last time he did come on, he was telling us about the incident that happened with another prisoner on the block, and they made all the incarcerated individuals on that block suffer as a result. They locked them all down. They took away their privileges. So we may have Reginald calling in during this show. So I just want to let everybody know that this is a problem that he's been running into for the past couple of weeks. We're going to be talking about some of the things we're going to be talking about today is the criminal justice reform. But I wanted to briefly talk about some of these issues that are going on in the prisons. One thing that has occurred is that this is one example. There has been a prisoner in prison who was operated on several years ago. The prison doctor removed all of the cartilages in his leg and also in his shoulder and cut into his collarbone. Now, these are some issues that go on with these contracted medical providers in the prisons. And we have WellPath throughout, pretty much throughout the country, in many of the prisons across the country. They service like 37, I believe that's what was said. However, their founder is serving time in prison for bribery, for some fraudulent activities. And the providers themselves in the prisons across the country have been causing a lot of damages to the incarcerated population. There have been prisoners who have died because of WellPath and their ineffective practices. There are prisoners who have been permanently damaged, and there are prisoners who are going through so much more. And if you go on the internet and you type in WellPath lawsuits, you're going to find there are many. And what happened, I just learned not too long ago, is that WellPath had another name prior to WellPath. So what happens is a lot of times when these companies are doing so poorly, so bad, they change their names. They change their names to reflect a different organization or provider agency, when in fact it's the same one that has caused damages. So I just want everyone to be aware. If you can, if you know anyone incarcerated, or if you know any advocates, or you yourself are an advocate or a loved one of an incarcerated individual, please check and find out who the provider is. And if you will, please call in and let us know. Because WellPath is a company that I really, really think we need to expose on a more higher level. And these people need to be put out. They need to be forgotten about and let go of these Department of Corrections facilities. Because as long as these people are operating in the prisons, we're going to see a lot of prisoners dying. We're going to see a lot of them disabled, permanently damaged. And so these are some issues I really, really would like for all of you to look into. We have a caller, 727.
Yeah, Leona, it's Melissa with Warrior Within Project just popping in. I just got your invite.
Oh, okay. Melissa, do you want to let the audience know again what your organization is and what it's about?
Yes, so Warrior Within Project, I'm just outside of D.C. I also work in reentry with a local organization. I have a lot of focus in DOC and mental health, and working on a rally initiative for 2025 with Coast to Coast Collaboration, and seeking input from anybody who's willing to talk about it.
And I'm so glad you brought that up.
That's me in a nutshell.
I'm so glad you brought that up about the mental illnesses. We're going to go back to that, but I just want to get this other caller that's calling in. 440, you want to state your name, please? Hello? Okay, I guess they're just listening. Melissa, you mentioned mental illnesses, and I want to say this is another. I want to really touch base on this today. And the reason I say this is because I don't know if you heard, audience, that the church, Joel Osteen's church, was attacked again. There was a female person that went in. No one was killed except herself. She was shot down by the police in that state. And this was in Houston, Texas. And her child, she brought her 7-year-old child with her. And the 7-year-old was shot in the head and is in critical condition. They said that this young lady had mental illnesses, and that they knew this 5 years ago, I believe they said. Mental illness in this country is an epidemic that our government is failing to do anything about. And it really frustrates me, because all this money going over to Israel and Ukraine should be going into improving the mental health situation in the United States of America, in addition to improving the prisons in the United States of America and all other things that are going on. This really, really upset me when a child is going to be shot in the head because the mother had mental illnesses. Now she's dead. The child may not make it. And this is happening at a church. This is a mega, they call it the mega church. So I guess it's the biggest, one of the biggest churches. But had not the woman gotten shot herself, we don't know what she would have done in that church. But this is why I have a thing about these pastors and these preachers and all these people that are preaching to the choir, when they need to be going out in the remote areas. They need to be going into the prison, because these people that are suffering from mental illnesses in prison are probably so angry, because here they are suffering from an illness and it's not being addressed outside before they go to prison, and it's not being addressed when they go to prison. I was watching Charles Stanley was on last night, and I have to say this, because I've never seen a person, an evangelist, do what he did. He was talking about when things are going well in our lives, where all of this joy is inside, we're letting it all out of our system because it's something positive. He said, but when it's something painful, when it's a trauma that, you know, we went through as children, we hold it all in. He talked about how he never knew his biological father. His mother married his stepfather when he was a child, when he was a toddler. And he had been sexually abused by the stepfather. This is a pastor. He doesn't even call himself a pastor. He calls himself a doctor, because as it says in the Bible, no one should be calling anyone pastor or reverend or father, because there's only one, the Most High. But this Dr. Charles Stanley talked about all the pain that he went through, and he said to the people in the congregation, he said, you look around you. He said, I can tell you there are so many in this church right now who have been through some kind of trauma, and they have not opened up to anyone about it. He said, you know what happens when people hold it in and they don't let it out? You know what happens? They let it out in the wrong way. And we have mass incarceration now because of these mental illnesses.
And I think it's, and I just want to pop in with what you just said right there. I don't mean to interrupt, but I think it's important to highlight how you just said people, you know, when they have unresolved, unhealed trauma, they don't make the best decisions. And what we're seeing now, which is, you know, forward movement, but needs even greater recognized, is that trauma rewires our brains, and it actually makes it, you know, up to impossible for some people. As we see, you know, people coming out of solitary confinement, worse trauma, bad trauma, it's harder for them to make proper decisions, because that rewiring from the trauma is literally affected in our frontal lobe, which is for our self-regulation. And it's now, you know, being introduced into courtrooms for criminal defense because it is that drastic and that real. But anyway, go ahead. I just, you know, like I said, hurt people hurt people. And whatever that, you know, entails holds true.
No, I had stopped. I wanted you to further that talk about it. But I will say that these are the things that are happening in the prisons. We have people, and as long as this government does not address, and these NRA, the gun issues, you know, all they need to do is have, before anyone can purchase a weapon or get a license to practice, they should have an evaluation, a psychological evaluation. And I recommended this to a senator, believe it or not, and because he was writing something on gun control and recommendations. And I said, not only should they have a psychological evaluation when they first get a license, but they should be mandated to have psychological evaluations every 2 or 3 years, because people can be normal when they purchase and when they get their license. As I said, when they're holding all this trauma in, all this pain in, they might be pretty normal at the time, resilient. But one thing can set them off. One thing can set them off, and that's when they may go mass shootings, or they might end up killing somebody or killing themselves. So I believe that regular evaluation, psychological evaluation, should be mandated if they're going to be so focused on having weapons.
I also
believe they need to do something about these producers, these movies that they're putting out there. Because with mental illnesses in the United States and people watching all this violent movies and all these witchcraft movies, it's only putting ideas in the minds of those who are mentally ill. And they need to start looking at what they want. Do they want money, or do they want stability in the United States of America? It seems like they're trying to get both, and they're not going to be able to do that.
And I think it's tragic across the board. And just to piggyback on that, you know, as far as, you know, the government not doing anything, and we've seen that, you know, when we can tirelessly work ourselves to the bone to try to bring awareness and change in legislation, and they drag their feet and they release certain programs, and, you know, our inmates are the ones often, you know, failed by, you know, people and places and organizations that were there to protect them. And we need to start assessing them, you know, and their mental health as soon as they enter the criminal justice system, because what they're coming out to, the government isn't moving fast enough, and they can't for radical change. And I think that radical awareness of DOC and the injustices and the abuses and vile violations are being spread like wildfire more now than ever in the last few years. And I think that with that, you know, I think as a community, we're going to have to step up more as community members and taxpayers that turn cheek for decades and lifetimes of what's going on inside of DOC. And we need to step up as a community and realize that we're going to have to go all hands on deck if we have hope for our children down the line, because our reentry citizens need it. Our children are failed by mental health and issues at home. They need it. I mean, we have to build a sense of community in our communities and rebuild that way, because I think asking or depending on the government to do anything has just gotten us further into demise, because they, whatever they come up with, they find a way to riddle it with greed and corruption. And, I'm sorry. I just had to share that.
You know, we have so much, we have, as Dr. Charles Stanley said, we have so much built inside of us right now that we're talking to the choir when we try to talk to our government, our legislative members. And it's sad, because they should be taking the advice of advocates and of people who have loved ones inside, and also people who are inside. They should be taking their advice. They should be asking them questions. They should be meeting with them. Because what's happening is they don't have all the facts, but the ones that do are the ones that are out there working with these people every single day.
Yeah. Free of charge, too, you know, exactly. You know, just passionate to help our communities. Many of us, you know, going through it ourselves, or just wanting another person not to suffer like we have or the inmates have or any of that.
I'd like to welcome the caller again, 440, if you'd like to respond to any of this. No. You know, this is why we have problems in the United States. People don't talk. You know, I was going to say another thing. When people are having problems with somebody, and then all of a sudden someone else takes sides with that person, even though they don't know the full facts, they won't ask both sides. They'll just take it from the one side. And this is another problem we have in this country. You know, there are people who have had traumas because they had things happen in their lives with their own loved ones. And it was so devastating.
Yeah.
They attempted suicide, or they left the country, or they, you know, they did all these things that everybody might think was they were under normal circumstances. But when tragedies happen, even in situations like this, it's so traumatic, it's so overwhelming that people, sometimes the first thing that they do is to try to commit suicide. You know, they can't cope with it. But what happens is when they come out, a lot of times they don't even know how long they were in the hospital. They don't know when they got out. They don't know. They were existing, but they weren't aware of what they were doing even after the fact. To this day, I know people who have gone through this, people who have gone through their traumas, their loved ones are incarcerated, and to this day, these people don't know what actually was going on in their own lives back then.
Yeah,
so
I can personally testify to that. Yep.
Me, you know? And so this is a major issue. People don't ask questions, and I wish they would, because everybody assumes in this country, and no one asks questions, so they're not getting educated. What they're doing is they're existing themselves like a lamp on a table. Yet they will talk about the issues off the air or to themselves or to their friends. But when it comes right down to coming out and talking about it and asking about it and bringing up some kind of recommendations that they would do if it were them making the decisions, they don't do anything. And that's what we have in the United States of America. When I can interview people from other countries across the pond that make it a point to come on the show, not only come on to talk about these issues in America, not so much in their country, but in America, because a lot of them are actually working with prisoners in the United States of America, while our own people are sitting on their, if you want to hear it, are sitting on their behind. And they wonder why.
I think it's
such a problem. Go ahead. I'm sorry. When I get wound up, I get wound up.
I'm just cheering you on. I mean, I agree with a lot of the things that you're saying, and I think it just speaks more to even, you know, that's why it's so important that we bring that radical realization and we keep bringing forward the pain to bring the change and have these stories aired out and people being transparent about the pain and suffering. Because the facts are, is general majority of us have had tragic crap happen to us, whether as a child, a teenager, an adult, or elderly. Somebody has broken you down in a way that you didn't think you were going to be able to come out of. And you did, but sometimes and oftentimes it rears its head in different ways, and some of them very unfortunate. We just got to build a community. We gotta keep informing people that don't want to be informed. The taxpayers that turn their cheek and say criminals get what they deserve, you know, they have no clue, because I guarantee if they spend 24 hours in any DOC across the country, they might have a different view. The tragedy is so real, and what we are struggling with the most is those taxpayers thinking that their tax money is actually doing as the government is stating that it should, and it's not, and it hasn't for lifetimes. We have been fighting solitary since 69, you know, and when they first brought it to federal court and a judge stood up and said it was wrong and mentally incapacitating those that are put into solitary and what can become of that for long-term exposure. And what did we do since 1969? We just went to mass incarceration. The baby boomers just kept brushing all the abuses. And you brought up sexual abuse, and that is rampant among the baby boomers and their children. And those children are what raised my generation. And so on, and it just, that generational trauma is very real, and I could keep going. It goes way back, and we can see the government just capitalized on our pain, and they will continue to do it. So that's why it's upon us. You know, we got reentry programs being released in record numbers, and they're often by inmates, our former inmates or loved ones, who've been there, and they're offering real change, you know. So I just think that we as every community across the country have to build our sense of community at the reentry point, reacclimate our men, because we can't stop the government from breaking them down. They've been doing it too long. We can keep fighting in legislation to try, and we can keep bringing spiritual support into the prison and other programs, but we got to be ready for them regardless on the outside, because it's going to take us decades to fix the inside. We've got to welcome them home like we do our soldiers in combat. You know, these men are coming from a fight or flight stage that they have been stuck in and forced in for a long period of time, coming out more damaged than going in. And we have to help each other. We really
do. And you
know
what I noticed, though, one of the things about the military, they will give the military that much. They will let the people incarcerated from that were in the military, they will admit that they are suffering from PTSD, but they don't realize that the ones that they're not talking about are the ones that are incarcerated that were traumatized as children and as adolescents,
yep.
That were traumatized by the same traumatic experiences, only they're not in the military. And this is, to me, this is what they should be doing, is evaluating them and diagnosing them properly. But what they do is they diagnose the prisoners with antisocial behavior. With the military, they diagnose with PTSD. So these are some of
right.
the things that are consistent. You know, just because they were in the military doesn't mean that the others are not human. And a lot of these others were either in productive jobs or they were in college or high school, and they deserve the proper evaluations. And as I started
Absolutely.
To mention, I first started the show, the prisoner that was permanently damaged by WellPath, they removed all the cartilages in his leg and in his shoulder, and they cut into his collarbone. Now, a lawyer got involved, and all of a sudden now, the prisoner doesn't want to sue for money, but all he wants is to be able to go to an outside surgeon, outside hospital, and see if an orthopedic surgeon can restore, replace, you know, try to undo the damages that doctor, prison doctor did. Now, the DOC and WellPath at first agreed, and then they changed their mind. They said that they would allow him to have the surgery with one of their doctors. Well, it was one of their doctors that permanently damaged him. So he said, no, he wants to go to an outside doctor. And then they said they wouldn't pay. Then they said they would pay, but he'd have to go to one of their doctors. And what prisoner is going to be stupid enough to go with that, only to have more damage done?
So yeah, I mean, that's a medical PTSD that they received in there. You know, they come out in more pain or further worsened physically, you know, due to this, you know, surgeon or what have you, and that he's got to be terrified of going to one of their doctors.
Exactly. And that same doctor has other lawsuits or had other lawsuits filed. You know, you can go on the internet. You can go on the internet and type in, what's the name, Dr. Adriana Carrillo. And you're going to see there have been lawsuits filed against her. Adriana Carrillo. I don't know if it's C-A-R-R-I-L-L-O or if it's C-A-R-I-L-L-A or whatever. But you'll find it. Just like WellPath, you go on the internet and type in WellPath lawsuits. You know, and you go on the internet and you type in guards being caught smuggling drugs into the prisons. You're going to find out who's bringing the drugs in. Anything that people think that is all on the prisoners need to go on the internet and type in guards or COs or prison officials or prison doctors or WellPath. They're going to find the truth.
Absolutely. And I just want to highlight, and I'm so sorry, I think it's really important to highlight about the drugs that you just mentioned being brought into the prison system. I've recently come across, because I'm so networked into the advocacy groups and all the pages on Facebook and such, social medias, I've recently come across one for K2 and Spice Papers that, you know, that we have people out there literally bragging and showing off that they are spraying these papers with chemicals, giving them to their connections inside, and those connections inside selling them to the other inmates, and these inmates, you know, going up to even death, you know, or serious injury because of it, because it's such dangerous chemicals. And it's just being, it's literally just being allowed on Facebook, regular posts and updates about this. And how he's doing it and who he's sending it to. And it's just, and there's more of them out there, and it's really scary. I can't believe they haven't been shut down. And I, you know, not that I'm a snitch by any means, but I did one report on one video because they were abusing another inmate. And it's just tragic. You know, it's tragic. It's us turning against ourselves, being supported by the COs that allow the other contraband too. And it's tragic.
And I just, you know, I think that people need to be more aware, and I think people need to start doing their own research, because if they're not going to call in, and they don't have to, if they don't want to call in, if they don't want to discuss the issues, and they're content with the way things are in this country, then so be it. You know, I believe in a higher power, and I know that that higher power is watching everyone in this world and sees all who are doing nothing and all who are trying to do other things. And I'm going to give 440, if you'd like to say anything while you're on with us, please feel free to.
Yes. I wanted to just let you know that I attend an online school for paralegal, and we're doing we're gathering information from every state, from BOP to immigration to the state prison, trying to find out what kind of resources are available to offenders when they're being released, what programs are really being given and taught. And then we're compiling the book. This is started from a prosecutor out of Arizona. And I live in Ohio, so I'm doing Ohio. So if anybody has contact information or knows any information, please, you can get with Leona, and I can give Leona my information. And they also want to see about us being able to help any offenders in doing research or anything, too. So, you know, there's...
That's excellent.
Yeah, I'm excited. Started this, and that's amazing.
A prosecutor?
Yes.
Wow.
That's awesome. I would love to network and get you some contacts of some major reentry programs that are making incredible impact. I'm actually working on a reentry module as well as a resource, a national resource module, where maybe our efforts can collaborate and really bring forth some good stuff.
Yeah, you can get Leona, because they're at the end of all of it. They're going to compile all this information together, and we're going to see. One of our questions to these places are, how can we get these information into the offenders? You know, it doesn't help them if they don't allow the book in. So it's going to be a really big thing, really big deal, I think, and it's going to be a great resource book. So, and also, when it comes to CEOs bringing in drugs and stuff, you know, an interesting thing, do a public records request to your people who are listening to the your Department of Corrections during the COVID, like just pick one year during COVID and get a public records request of how many COs or how many staff members were disciplined or how much drugs were brought in, because that's public record. And you can get that information, and you'll find out that, yes, a lot of the COs and a lot of the employees are actually the ones bringing the stuff in, because the drugs were still coming in, and it wasn't through mail. They've stopped that, you know.
You think that they would be honest enough to say, I'm going to tell you what I learned, too, throughout the years, is that some of these COs, when they're fired, some of these people are fired, even some officials, they're fired, but they're not fired. They put them in other prisons, but they put them in office duty, so they still get their income, they still have their jobs. I didn't know
this, right.
But that happened with, I think it even happened with the, I think it was, his name was Mendonza. It happened with one in Massachusetts some years back. But they
said
that.
They're supposed to resign.
Yeah, they said he was moved to another, or another one, but I remember they said there was one of them that was actually moved to another prison and given office duty so that no one would know he was still there.
Yeah, but they aren't very high. You're right, because they're not very honest when they do, when they find somebody and a staff member bringing in drugs or something, they're able to cover that and have the person resign or give their notice, or like you said, reclassify them doing something else. But there are a few that are reported, you know, and it's just interesting to see. Some states may be even more open and honest. Some may not.
There's so many secrets held within the DOC across the country that people are not aware of. But I'm going to ask 615, do you want to state your name, please?
Sure, I'm Kyle. I'm just joining the show.
Hi, Kyle. How are you? We just interviewed you last week, right? But, Kyle,
yes,
I don't know
yes.
if you've been listening to what the girls have been saying, but what are your thoughts on some of these issues that we're talking about right now?
So I just jumped on to catch the tail end of the last comment, and the subject was drugs. It seems like drugs and maybe cover-ups inside of prisons, and
yes.
it's a very uniform, across-the-board thing. It's reliable that in every institution that you have, every detaining institution that you have, drugs coming in, and they're coming in one way. Nobody's sneaking out at night, buying them, coming back in. It's not law-abiding citizens. So it is a real problem. And since the start of COVID, the deaths have spiked. It's been out of this world, as well as the violence. And that is something that
yeah.
is controllable, and it's something that's unreported. That's all
I'll
say there.
I know of prisoners.
I've heard the same. Yeah, I've heard the same.
I know of prisoners too that have gotten tuberculosis, you know, from being in closed quarters, kept in the cells. A lot of these prisoners are still, even with the coronavirus, not as much of a risk as it was. There are people that are still being kept in their cells 21 hours a day, and they're not even on a restricted clock. And these are some
There's two prisons in Arizona or Alabama that have been almost a year, both of them, the entire two prisons, almost a year on lockdown like that.
Yeah.
And
audience,
it's a reason it gives the,
I want
it gives
the audience
guards
to know. I'm sorry, Kyle. I just want the audience to know when we talk about all these different prisons, we're talking with people right now on this show. One is from Illinois, is it Wisconsin or Michigan? One is
Ohio.
From Ohio. One is
yep.
from Massachusetts. And again, Emma, Miss Melissa, where are you from now? What state?
I'm in Northern Virginia, just outside of D.C.
Okay, so we have people on this show right now talking that are from different states, but they're talking about the same problems. This goes to show you that even though every state in the United States is inconsistent when it comes to operations, it's inconsistent, but the problems are all consistent and the problems are all the same in every
mm-hmm.
state. And this is why we
yep.
have to work in unity to bring stability in every single state in the United States so that it's almost like the federal prisons where people have an opportunity to be treated right, to be healed, to be comforted, to be rehabilitated, to be released. And I just want
right.
to make sure.
And I just have to intervene there. I have to intervene there because I've been close watch to a 10-year horrible situation out of a federal prison, and as much opportunity as they have, it is literally just as tragic in there in different ways
yep.
and similar ways. The gentleman I'm talking about, Eric King, he's making his own, you know, forward movement and bringing light to that in that where there are more funding opportunities in there, they are also absolutely vilely mistreated. And it's just, yeah, I just had to chime in
yeah.
with that. Sorry.
No, I'm glad
Absolutely.
You did.
That.
Somebody that's going to be co-hosting with me for a while is Rowena Andrews, and she's from South Carolina, Georgia. And she was telling me she was speaking with a warden and a prison counselor, and they were talking about wanting to do something positive in the prisons with mental health issues because they see the problem as well. So Rowena is planning on doing something on not only on the show here, but also trying to get virtual meetings, Zoom meetings, with not only the people here in the United States, but also with those who have been coming on the show from Belgium and from Amsterdam and elsewhere, to try to come on these meetings to start talking about addressing the mental health issues in the U.S. and how we can do this. Because when we talk about mental health, again, it's not meaning that they're retarded. It's meaning that they're traumatized as children. And just like this Dr. Charles Stanley was saying, we hold all this in when it's negative, when it's painful, but we let it all out when it's something joyful. And people should not be afraid to talk about the traumas that they've had, whether they be in the prison or outside the prison. They need to open up and they need to talk about it, because he said unless they talk about it, it's going to be coming out in the wrong way. And this is why I believe we have mass incarceration.
It is, and it's so hard for them to talk about it. It's so hard for them to talk about it, too. Like, even in my personal relation, 3 years later, or 2.5 years post-release, was starting to come forward with his story, which included a sexual assault and such inside DOC in Florida. And he literally backed out of being part of a book, being part of further, you know, shedding light, you know, opportunity, because he was absolutely terrified of retaliation from the gang that was related to his assault. So I think that we have struggled in, you know, getting that transparency for so many reasons, including that retaliation inside the DOC and outside.
I just learned, who was it that was telling me, a prisoner actually just got stabbed and is paralyzed for life now in one of the prisons in the country, and I forgot which state it was in, but he apparently was threatened by a gang member, and he went, because of fear, he went to, I guess he went to the authorities to say he wanted to be moved because he was threatened, he was afraid, and they didn't move him, and he ended up getting stabbed by gang members, and he's paralyzed now. Did you, any of you hear about that?
I've talked to people who that has happened to. I've interviewed some, in fact, and the wildest one is actually a guy who was who normally would have been in a county jail because he was pre-trial. However, because of his medical condition and the limited resources that the state had, they were housing people who were in that group at the prison. So he's in this prison for 3.5 years. Now, ultimately, they let him go. But he experienced the same coercion and bullying inside, and it's a uniform process in a lot of institutions. And what you have is people that are going into a situation where there's all of life's luxuries, if you will, are taken away, and you have needs. So when you can't get your needs met, you do the best that you can, and that attracts people, especially young people, to join gangs, to find strength in numbers. And they're just as traumatized as well, but the officers use the ability to go to segregation or to check in, as they say, to protective custody. They use that coercively as well, even down to the food. Every resource in prison is manipulated so that it ends up controlling and excluding people.
Tragically, including blocking people's books for damaged property. Like one gentleman out of Florida has $700 balance on his books. He can't get a soup unless somebody buys him a package, and he doesn't have that, you know, kind of support. And you know, we got hungry men out there for sure, already not getting fed decently and crazy schedules, 3 a.m. to 3 in the afternoon and nothing in between 3 p.m. and 3 a.m. I mean, it just don't make sense.
Wow.
Some loved ones in the group were talking about how their loved ones were being fed maggots, you know, how they were leaving the food out in the chow hall when they were cooking it. They were leaving food out for days and serving it.
Yeah.
You know, it's and the taxpayers, they always seem to think that the prisoners are getting all the good stuff, when in fact, it's the ones that are getting it are the staff, and the prisoners are getting garbage. They get food that mashed potatoes and things like that, but they don't get the good stuff.
It's true. Even I've heard boxes are not made for human consumption.
Yes, they say that on the box, and I've got people who've recorded with me that'll tell you the same thing in Michigan, in Ohio, in Arkansas. They're being fed food that you can't feed animals. You can't feed farm animals. Imagine that, like knowing how carcinogenic these products are and eating them every day, having no other option. And I mean, what does that do to your mental health? How can you build or find optimism
That's right.
Especially when
such
you
a
have
good point.
Psychological problems when you go in. And it just, you know, they play with your mind as well.
In every way, yeah.
There's no need anymore to be punitive. It says a lot about our society. But the jail is a reflection of our society. And
absolutely.
Until we can change the narrative, the you have to lose for me to win, you know, that is a part of our nation's fabric. We're not going to see the type of humanity extended to people inside or outside. And the people inside need us to help them change the culture in there. I guarantee you, if you look into 90% of the prisons in this country, the inmate population that is disruptive to peace or to safety, it's less than 20%, easily less than 20%. However, under this cloud of staff regulation or staff management of these people, it's impossible for the ones who just want to live their life or who want to spend their time trying to rehabilitate or get educated.
Yes.
They're denied that opportunity, and it's important for us. I've heard a couple of you all on this call say that, you know, you're in contact with people in there. It's so important because a lot of organizations don't do this direct service, this personal aid that a lot of us offer to inmates to help them access the world outside and stay connected.
Yeah,
so I appreciate
exactly.
everyone who does that, and it needs more attention. It's a type of advocacy that's not even named yet.
It really is, and I actually just want to chime in because I think if you don't know about it already, because I think it's newer. I know just outside the nation's capital here, we have a program, and I've heard of others trying to get in on it, of JPay newsletters, and I think it should be implemented as a community advocacy action, part of the whole, you know, community reform angle is getting on these JPay newsletters, connecting with these prisoners while they're inside, and start helping them with an assessment. And that's part of, like, my end of even building on top of those JPay newsletters is let's take it back 6 months to a year prior to EOS, assess them, find out what they need, and work on the outside to resource them. And then upon reentry, they can come and even do maybe some community service that can be recognized somehow and some kind of recognized reacclimation program, because we've been working with them for a year or 6 months. We know what they need. We are directing them to it. And then we have a big brother program on the outside that checks in with these people and makes sure that they're making these appointments and, you know, reacclimating to going to the store and being part of society, you know, with all that comes from DOC. That JPay bridge, I think, and its assessment by our community advocacy groups would be absolutely just powerful. It's already
that's
proving that here
right.
in Virginia.
That's a great idea. Sorry.
Yeah,
sorry.
I'd love to talk more about it. There's a lot of stuff I've got with a couple different organizations that's really powerful and ready to, like, we just want to share more about it because we want to share what's working. Because it's stuff that's so much easier than trying to get our government to make the change.
I'd like to hear more about it.
It's like no-brainer type work. So,
yeah,
you know, that's,
so
one of the reasons why Andy, I think Andy needs to be a little bit more clear about exactly what he wants to do, but he has it right because we, the people, seem to be the only ones that can possibly make changes because we don't have enough support and action activities being done by the legislative members around the country. I mean, they're trying.
Are you talking about Andy Williams, the hood candidate you're talking about? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a supporter for sure.
Yeah, what we have right now, we don't have good options out there as far as the upcoming presidential campaign, but I don't believe Andy's actually running for president, but he's running for We the People. So if everybody's in agreement, and we all seem to be in agreement with what this country is in need of reform itself, because right now this country is dysfunctional. This country is, look at, Look at in Lowell Prison in Florida, those female, all these female prisoners being raped by male guards. What in the hell are male guards doing in a female prison? What are females doing in a male prison? You know, this really is upsetting because these people don't, they're being taken advantage of. And I'll tell you, the Parkland shooter, unfortunate, he killed 17 people. He has a brother serving time in prison. His brother was not serving life. His brother wasn't serving. It was. I was just reading it on the internet the other day. His brother is a complete innocent. They both went to the same school that his brother, the brother, you know, the mass shooter went. But this kid is being tortured because of his brother. And he's saying he didn't do anything. So, you know, we have a very vengeful, retaliative system. And what happens is if people are connected, these people in prison, and they're going to try to keep this young man, I know, they'll try to keep him in prison for the rest of his life because his brother's on death row right now. But this is the kind of oversight. They need to have oversight for the overseers in these prisons around the country because if they don't, suicides are going to continue. Homicides are going to continue. People are going to lose their minds. They're going to be having more mental problems inside than ever before. And that's because they don't have anybody overseeing the criminals that are overseeing already. And I'm going to shut up because I keep interrupting and I'm long-winded. So please.
No, I am too. And I'm sorry if I cut off anybody because every single one of you, I feel very moved and privileged to be networking with. And this is exactly how we do it. So if I cut off anybody, I apologize. I don't mean to. Feel free to say anything at any time.
No, you girls and Kyle, feel free. I'm going to put myself on mute because I got to get some water. My throat is dry and from talking so much. But well, go on.
That's good.
I say keep talking. I'm here to listen and to learn, and if you're talking about stuff that's useful, then I've been talking all day. This conversation is overdue, and I think we're all coming here with the energy of lots and lots of people who've had no voice for no good reason.
Yes.
And I appreciate your passion. I wish that the rest of the world was as upset and frustrated and angry about this, because there's not one new complaint. These things, you can go back a century ago, and they've been the exact same complaints about incarceration: overcrowding, malnourishment, violence, harassment from guards, isolation. It's
slavery. It's modern day slavery.
There's nothing that was happening on plantations that's not happening inside of prisons today.
That's
just unexcusable. It makes me feel ashamed to be from here.
Yeah, when you listen to Leona's show, Franz Dowles, I think is how you pronounce his name, he's an ex-warden, and he's got an amazing theory and has done some amazing work over in his country, and he's just amazing. I mean, their prison, when you commit a crime, your punishment is being taken away from your family. You know, when you go to prison, it's not punishment when you get into prison. It's because you're taken away from your family. And then once you're in prison, that's when your rehabilitation is starting. Because what kind of neighbor are you going to be releasing? You know, are you going to release somebody that has no family, no experience, and doesn't know how to, like, do a checkbook or go to the grocery store or social anxiety? Or are you going to have somebody to have your neighbor as, a person that was taught, that actually had access to some really good services? And the recidivism, when the one lady was talking about, you know, networking and stuff, this recidivism, man, if you can get in there a year ahead of time of EOS and maybe law school, maybe medical school, you know, the doctors and nurses can volunteer to do those kind of things.
That is exactly, and I'm so sorry, just please, one second, piggyback on that. What you just said is actually part of the module that I'm building as far as a structured, creative outlet networking program that, with the reentry program being supported by our communities and volunteers who all of a sudden are hearing about these tragedies and want to do something and just need direction to do it, we can network reentry people who are into, you know, a category of music, a category of medical, a category of legal, a category of expressive arts, advocacy, whatever the case may be. Maybe you want to be a chef. Maybe, you know, Joe's place down the street needs a two-hour intern or whatever the case may be. That is exactly that focus that you were just talking about, and that support with volunteers is much part of the framework of that reentry network of inmates also collaborating with their efforts. And then that network being available to our community so people can log in and say, what can I go do for my community today? And they can see all these opportunities. And we can all barter and connect and just, I don't know, I believe it, and it was just, I'm glad to hear that somebody else had that same, you know,
ideas on it. I think there's a lot of people that are just trying to speak out. I know that I've been doing this for a few years, and you certainly don't make any friends. You know, when you when you speak out and people don't like to hear the truth, you become a target. So it's really a rough arena. So it's important, I think, as advocates that you stand together and you support one another.
Yes. I have an idea that I want to throw in right here because it feels like when it comes to offering resources that this is something that needs to be said. There is a huge wealth transfer happening right now in the legal system, and that's in the form of artificial intelligence. That that the people who are charged with the court officials, the prosecutors, the public defenders, who there's a couple good ones, a couple who try hard, but many of them are often just another cog in the wheel, helping aid or helping accelerate the person back to prison or to prison. There are a lot of ways to use AI, and I'll take the most known AI is ChatGPT right now. When I first heard about it about a year ago, or late 2022, what I started doing was compiling documents, templates of things that I thought might be useful to inmates. These are public statements. These are, I'll give you an example of one template that I built. I asked the program to name me the 20 technologies that would be most important to know about if I was just being released from prison after 30 years. What would I need to catch up on? And it lists them out. And then I asked it, give me an explanation of each one. Give me an explanation for a 6-year-old, and give me an explanation that's suitable for a 16-year-old, and so on. And with that, I was, and that's just one example of how I was able to start using the technology to inform people about things that they wouldn't naturally learn about in there because they're denied internet. This includes. Now, this isn't legal advice. Make sure you put that on there if you send it to anyone. I created templates of motions, all the motions that you could possibly need to file if you're in this state, a motion for compassionate release, a motion for this, for that. The 60 most important Latin terminology, legal concepts that are most oftenly confused. And it spit them right out, you know, in under a second. And boom, use this tool to help people become empowered. I don't want to say educated. It's giving, as long as you're learning in there, when you get access to this type of information that you might not have gotten in life anyway, you find a reason to live. You find hope where you wouldn't see it before.
Yes, purpose.
Learning is an essential part of healing. So, yeah, I just want to put that in there and say that if we're not using AI, now's the time to do it, and these are the ways to do it. Put it to service for other people if we won't put it in the service for ourselves.
Thanks. I think you just absolutely opened the door. Like, I know what you're talking about. I actually have just recently done some research on the ChatGPT, and it's said that, you know, this access, this access can literally inform you of any knowledge that is needed for anything, skill, life, or other. And not only that, it's becoming more readily available. There's more trainings going on about it. But you just mentioning the fact that you're able, I never thought about it that way, that you're able to say, explain it to me as if I was a six-year-old, explain it to me as if I was this way or this age.
If anyone wants to see how I use it, I'm happy to do that in a Zoom call after the show or at any other time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, let's do it. Let's do it because that's powerful because if we can get the assessment part, getting our emotional, emotional regulation score, it's a really simple test, and it opens the door for incredible assessment. And what you just did was really just brand, like, that's incredible. Zoom call for sure. That's really,
Kyle,
I never
there.
Thought about that.
I
right.
want to be there, please. Yes.
Kyle. Do you have a Zoom account, Kyle, or any of you? I have a Zoom account.
I do.
Okay, because I have one too, and anytime you want to use it. And again, if you want to take one or two a days a week on the radio show here to start doing some training on these issues, because this is all new to me. But this is something that if it's going to help, you know, there's two or three days that are free if you want to, if all of you want to take some of those days and do something with
yeah.
it as well.
I had mentioned, and I think I had mentioned like Friday or Saturday, like you had brought up, and if you, either of you guys would ever like to, if you guys get your own spot or whatever, please collaborate with me anytime I
yes.
end up on, because I just a lot of great information today. I feel very moved. I'm sorry. I've gotten chills and my adrenaline's rushing and all kinds of stuff. It's definitely a meeting of incredible minds, and I'm very thankful.
I'll tell you one thing. Mental issues are starting to really come out strong now in this country, especially not only in the prisons but in the communities as well. So this is a time for everybody to try to come together to work on some of these issues involving the mental illnesses in the prisons, the lack of appropriate treatment, psychological, medical, and spiritual treatment, a lot of these things that are not happening in the prisons. But again, we need to hold the Department of Corrections around the country accountable. And I say defund the Department of Corrections and fund these mental health facilities. Establish, there's none of them open, and a lot of people are leaving because they're not getting paid enough to be dealing with people with psychological issues. So take some of this money that they're giving to the prisons for doing nothing and give it to some of these organizations, mental health organizations or foundations that are actually trying to do something, and give them the money. I'd rather see the money going to a long-term residential treatment facility than to go to a prison where they're doing all this damage control.
That's right. So we're doing the damage control out here, right?
Yeah.
It needs to. I wanted to say, too, this, I noticed, I came across a petition on change.org that somebody had out there to not end life without parole and life sentencing. And I guess they had a loved one that was killed. But I want to say one thing. A lot of people that have gone out there and done mass shootings, they have mental illnesses, of course, but something happened in their lives, too. You know, you hear about a lot of them who were bullied in school when they were kids. You hear a lot of about yes. a lot of them coming from, you know, the Parkland shooter. I wanted to finish up on that. It showed the mother, the biological mother was a drug addict. Those kids were born, and when they were born, the mother was heavily involved in drugs. She gave those kids up after having them. And they showed her, they even tried to get her to talk to the media. She refused to talk to the media. She shows no love for her two sons. She shows no emotional nothing about what happened. And these two kids, they said that's all they have is one another. And now that their one brother disappointed the other by doing the mass shooting, now both of them are suffering. And this kid that's suffering the most didn't do anything. But those two kids grew up traumatized because of the mother.
And they're going to go to a system. They're going to, yeah.
And they did. They were in situations where they were abused even more.
And they're going to be in foster care and CPS, which has just as much creed, damage, and horrible, vile things going on. My goodness.
I want to piggyback on that to say that it speaks to a mindset shift that we have to have that I was trying to talk about earlier, but I couldn't find the words for. This healing that we're trying to bring about, or this change that we're trying to bring about, is going to come with everyone having a need for healing. And
yes.
Not just the people who are wearing jumpsuits or prison blues. This includes people who work in the prison, as well as society.
That too. I agree.
If we're being honest, we're coming from we're in a society that for years has, I don't want to say celebrated our child abuse, but we've not known how to raise people well. If you're a victim or you're the traumatizer, you suffer damage in either shoes, and a real test of our initiatives, if you will be to extend the same mercy that we're asking for as we demand it for the people who deserve it. I doubt there's anybody who has traumatized others who has not, if you look into their past, been traumatized or shielded from connection themselves. And that's going to suck.
You are
so
right.
We want to call awful. I don't want to love my enemy. I want them to die.
My Jesus tells me forgiveness and redemption. Forgiveness and redemption. That's across the board for sure.
Yes, it's got to be part of the message. Otherwise, we're not sincere.
Right.
And people will.
You almost brought me to tears, man. You really did.
I'll tell you one thing with the prison, like you say, staff. There's a lot of people who are overseeing who, like you say, they have mental illnesses too. A lot of them were brought up in racist homes. A lot of them were brought up in homes where schools where they were bullied themselves. And now they're in a situation where they're in control. And that's why you see so many of them act as gangs themselves, because they get together with other peers that are in uniform and that are overseeing that probably went through the same situations they went through. And so now they're coming together and they're going to get back at people that have never done anything to them. But this is the way they were brought up. And I'll tell you,
I think that's our common ground. That's our common ground, is at some point in time we have all suffered something that has hurt us and formed us. And I think we've all been guilty of hurting somebody else in response or down the line. And that's where we all meet. We have all suffered and we all need better and we all need positive mental health. That's every single one of us.
Exactly.
That's where our barriers come down. You know, that's where it knows no race. It knows no dollar sign. We have the politicians that have hurt us. They too, you know, suffered at some point in time. And that's where forgiveness and redemption is going to be required on all sectors, all angles, because it's going to be the only thing that works.
Quickly, I wanted to mention gang members. There was a time years ago when they were, anyone that wanted to leave the gang in prison, there was a place, I think it was in Connecticut or New Jersey or wherever, where the government was placing these people, taking them out of their gangs, and it was some kind of protection and some kind of de-orientation or whatever, a de-escalation of the gang mentality. And I don't know whatever happened to that, because you don't hear anymore about it. And these people in prison, they still have the gang, you know, the gang violence. So I don't know if the governor is still working on it, but I do say the government should not be placing prisoners that are not affiliated with gangs in the same block or the same unit, because that is a dangerous thing.
I have to jump in here because I've seen it. It's personal. I've experienced it. when people join gangs, they do it in their, oftentimes in their teenage years, very rarely in their 20s, and almost never, you know, beyond that. And that speaks to something. It speaks to, you had a guy named Andre Hester on your show a couple of weeks ago who spoke about it not having that influence in his life that he was looking for and seeking it somewhere else and finding it in the form of the gang, which was, I'm going to come back to that. Gangs don't have HR departments. You don't get to, it's not like we can go and, as you were saying, Liana, it's not an environment that is conducive to letting people out. And in the gang structure, losing people equals lessened security, which is not something that anybody seeks. So you've got people that are in, by the time you're in your 30s, once you've outlived your ignorance or outlived the decision that you had to make or felt you had to make for survival, you are still, for your own safety, oftentimes engaged in this marriage, if you will, or this social contract that no longer fits you. And another challenge is with gangs. It is, and I'm the first person to make this mistake. I guarantee you, I make it at least 10 times a day, of otherizing people by it. Gangs are the next target, and they've already been the target before, but they are the next target to start a war on. You know how when we say we're having a war on something, it's something frivolous and it ends up meaning brown people overall? Am I losing anybody here?
No,
we're going to empower those people to change the narrative by recognizing them as human first. Because I've not been active in a gang in, you know, 15 years, but I've not gone through a formal process of leaving. I just chose to do something different with my life. I don't have the same option behind bars. I literally might not have a choice behind bars. And we've got to humanize those people as well so that the outside world can see that they're just people. Usually
Kyle,
just
organized.
I'm sorry.
Kyle, you mentioned that you went to prison when you were 16 years of age. So I'm trying to understand what you must have went through as a 16-year-old in an adult prison.
Yes.
So that would justify.
Oh, you want to answer?
That would justify what you're saying now, then, right? I understand.
Yes. Yes. That's very appropriate context. It made total sense then, and it probably still would today, but it doesn't have to be that way for everyone else, you know, going forward. But as long as gangs are seen as the untouchables of society out here, that will be a tool that can be manipulated by prison staff, by politicians, by the general rhetoric of the society. Well, we've got these gangs in here, and now we have, you know, we're going after them. I mean, don't get me wrong, there is group conspiracy crime that goes on in prisons, but let's call it that. Let's call it that. If we start labeling the action as opposed to the person, then we'll give those people a chance to see themselves differently.
I think they need to have separate prisons.
I'm kind of scattered. I'm sorry.
That's okay. They need to have
you're on it.
Separate prisons for gang members, first of all. And also, they need to, what they do, believe it or not, and you know this, a lot of these COs, they try to set prisoners up to make them, you know, try to make them look like snitches so that they can...
Yes.
These people can wrongfully be attacked and killed. In California, they pit They put the gang members, gang members and
rivals.
Their rivals out in the yard at the same time so that they can, they're like, the staff is like gladiators. You know, they want to see, they want to have this entertainment. So this goes on around the country, and this is sad because this is why so many people are killed. Our government, as I said before, our legislative members need to sit down and really talk with activists and advocates that have been advocating for years with these people incarcerated around the country to get the full facts of what's going on so they know what they're doing when they try to go for prison reform or criminal justice reform. They're only touching some of the pieces. They're not touching all of them. And I'll tell you, the Department of Corrections treats legislative members just like right now, Netanyahu, nobody likes Netanyahu, but yet, and he's defying even President Biden, who is close, very close to him. But Netanyahu's going off in his own direction, doing his own thing. And as a result, but we're still sending all this money over there. That's the same thing in the prisons. We're seeing all this injustice, all of this abuse going on, all this deprivation, but yet we're still funding them. So if we took that money and started bringing defunding, and we said, what we'll do is we'll fund accordingly. When we see, we'll do it as an initiative for the good work you're doing with the prisoners inside. That way, the prison, the DOC would try harder to do the right things instead of doing the wrong thing because they're not getting the monies that they were getting before. And the only way they're going to get that money is if they do something positive to show, to be transparent with what they're doing with the prisoners. We're our own worst enemies. Our government, their own worst enemies when they don't do these things. They fund the prisons, but they defund this mental health facilities on the outside. Yet they.
I think it's part of the divide and conquer, angle that our nation has supported while fighting it at the same time. Because I think it's that greed and corruption. You know, our programs are originally, you know, maybe built with good intention, but before long, you know, it's manipulated by greed and corruption and a dollar sign. You know, as far as like, and I don't mean to counteract what you said, Leona, about removing gangs from prisons. I don't think that that's even feasible because there are so many that even if we did find a way to implement that kind of action, I think that we would just be recreating them as quickly as we were removing them because we force these men and women to act in a way where they have to seek protection. They have to seek, you know, ill nature sometimes to survive because it is that a lot of times, the survival of the fittest. It's not a matter of wanting to do your time well. It's a matter of you may have to turn cheek at somebody being assaulted because of retaliation, or you may have to do something you wouldn't normally do on the street because you're starving. And I think that removing the gangs is just almost next to impossible because these men and women are seeking and searching for something to help them make it through, including the drugs that come in. You know, they're not properly medicated or cared for, and they're being tortured all day long and listening to screams and yells and whatever else. So you can't blame them for needing to escape either. And I think a lot of support in the realizing that these gang members are those failed children who were seeking support and family, maybe financial support or what have you, and they are just the same as all of us. I've known gang members, you know, growing up, and they are just as human as us. I don't think we can take the gang out of the inmate, but
no, you know what?
We can work on humanization. You know, like.
What I think they need to
do,
I think they need to put gang members in separate prisons and then break it down from there. You know, break down the ones that they if they're observing, if they're really overseeing like they should, they will see those in the gangs that are not as violent as others, or they're not as active as others, or they're not as, you know, verbal as others, and then try to take them out you know, individually and try to work with them, or even start a pilot project where they take, say, a dozen. They take a dozen of these gang members that they see that are not as violent as the others and try to work with them separately. And they need to take those.
Yes.
They need to take
that sounds
those
good.
and they need to take those who are involved with that are in for drugs, and they need to put them in separate prisons, drugs and alcohol, put them in separate prisons, the same thing. And they can do it because what they're doing now, the same amount of population is the same, only they're all mixed in, like cattle.
Right.
They need to need to separate them all, and then they need to work with them individual or in little groups at a time.
Yes.
Think about
that. Yes, I think
that
would be great.
If you're someone who committed a murder, we're going to throw you in cage one. If you're somebody who committed armed robbery, we're going to throw you in cage one. You're somebody, you're a guard, it's your first day, you work cage one. You got what, embezzlement or check fraud, cage one. It doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't.
Right.
The place to start is by letting or rehousing the elderly population, if you're not going to let them go. If you got people that are 55, 60, you shouldn't have them being around people that are 18 and to 25 being bullied at times. They can't eat.
And vice versa, like you went in at 16, because I have personal experience with this, went in at 17 to 27. Same thing with integrating our children in with adult murderers and such. I think that it's just a disservice on either end, the young and elderly population.
Yeah, I don't see I don't see where it's so difficult for the DLC to do these kind of things. You know, just because there's the same amount of people in prison, but the only thing is they're categorizing them so that they're putting them in order, you know, making it orderly. And that way, the contracted providers or the independent providers that go inside can start working with these individuals, you know, orderly manner. But putting them all in there doesn't make sense. And then you have the elderly.
Yeah,
80
structure.
Yeah. You know what we should do is actually, as many organizations that want to join, we should start an alliance, a national alliance of organizations and foundations, advocates who are coming together to start making positive changes on a national level in every state.
Yes. That's exactly what my rally is about, and a Warrior Within project is a national collaboration to be the foundation of a reentry program that starts with every angle, from the community, with advocacy, with legal, with training, with just all hands on deck. Leona, you couldn't have put it into better words. That is exactly.
I also heard, I don't know which ones they are, but I also heard that there are some professional athletes that are for prison reform. So if there's some way that we could even find out who they are and connect with them to see if they would work with us. Plus, like I say, with Van Jones and Brian Stevenson and John Legend, and get them involved. We have their contact information. So maybe this is what we need.
I feel like a high five all across the board right now. I really do.
There's never been a better time. There's never been a better time, because you've got John Stewart, John Oliver, John Legend, these people with major, major platforms that will speak up. I remember last year, all three of them did something independently within the same month. And I think that these windows, when they're open, we have to take them. For example, you just asked which athletes are willing to say something about prison reform. We need to pursue that, and we need to find out which athletes are not willing.
I think that's just as valuable. Find out
sports.
Who's supporting and who's not. Who's voting?
There's a lot of political power entwined with sports, and especially football and basketball, and we need to leverage it. The same amount of energy that professional athletes give to BLM, that's needed. You can't speak honestly, much less care sincerely about racial issues without being equally invested in changing incarceration. The two are inseparable. Mass incarceration is how black people grew here in America. That's how we started. That's the start of our story. Therefore,
yeah.
I think that there is an untapped well there of in professional sports that we need. When it comes to the changing the culture part, you know, I'm not the policy person. Someone else has to do that. But when it comes to changing culture, then I feel like I'm going to go to the athletes and ask them. If it was up to me, I'm going straight to the athletes and saying, how can we do this? Who will say what? LeBron, Patrick, who's willing to stand up and do the right thing? It's only going to benefit you and a lot of others. There's no downside to telling the truth about people's humanity.
And I've been encouraging prisoners, the incarcerated, if we can just get it out to all of them, I've been encouraging them to try to start writing to a lot of these celebrities and these athletes about, you know, help joining forces to help out in these areas as well. Well, we just have
and
to
that's for that JPay newsletter. Yes, JPay newsletter can get that information to them.
We have to keep encouraging because 2.3 million people incarcerated. If we could get 100,000 to start writing, you know, that would be a miracle and a blessing. But these are the things that we need to start looking at.
And I'm so sorry. I have to jump off here. I actually have to call another advocate regarding a active returning a reentry situation. But I just want to thank you guys so much.
We're getting ready to close anyway. And I wanted Kyle. I wanted you to and again, Melissa, let the audience know about the work that you're doing right now and how they can get in contact with you if they want to volunteer or they want to help out in any way.
Go ahead, Kyle. I'll let you chime in, and then I'll circle back because I want to get your information.
Okay, sure. The easiest way to contact me is at amplifiedsilencepodcast@gmail.com. That's amplifiedsilencepodcast@gmail.com. And from there, I'm happy to share the resources and platforms that I'm connected with anyone.
Okay,
awesome. And Kyle, if you can't get a hold of get into contact with Jeffrey Deskovic, because Jeffrey went into prison when he was 16 too. So I think you should talk.
Definitely. We had a meeting planned last week. I think he was getting on a flight at the time, and it was right after the Monday of last week when we did the show. Yeah, we're gonna reschedule
because
for sure.
If we are able to do a national alliance and whoever's heading it can apply for the funding, and then maybe Jeffrey can be, you know, one of the attorneys or the attorney that heads the entire thing. That would be good because he has a foundation as well. So let's see.
And you know, this
happens.
Book that this lady is contributing. Sorry, go ahead.
Now, whenever possible, you need people who've been there. You need the voices inside of there to lead it. We're doing the legwork out here, but their stories are actually what's going to change the minds of people when they realize what we've been doing to people for so long.
Yeah.
It's their stories and our job to support them. So I like the idea of anybody like Jeffrey who's got firsthand experience, being active in leadership.
And I'm sorry, I got to jump off here. So I'm just going to, give my information real quick and just piggyback that support with a little bit about what I wanted to talk to you guys about later. It exactly speaks to that in branching our inmates inside, giving them purpose and healing, giving them their voice back by them being able to communicate with us on the outside. I've got it piloted in Florida right now where I've even, soup for a story. Give me your transparency and I'll send you a soup, and it's just a little gesture. It's not much, but it means a lot and it offers them a healing outlet. And I hope to, get either other people to read them, on podcast with me or, I'll read them or how, whether it's a newsletter that we cycle. I definitely want to speak on that with you guys again. And Kyle on, I'm sorry, go ahead.
How do we find you?
So I'm a little all over the place, but a Warrior Within project, a Warrior Within Us project at gmail.com. So A-W-A-R-R-I-O-R, within, and then U.S. So within us, but also within the U.S. because of the national collaboration. You can find me on Facebook, but email is the best way. Or reach out to Leona if it's a personal account or, you know, direct collaboration in the national rally that I hope to bring.
I can message the information to Kyle, your information to get connected. And what was the other thing I was going to say?
And to the other lady on the phone, too, you know, please, I'll reach out to Leona to connect with you. I would definitely like to speak again. But I got to jump off here, you guys. It was a passionate and powerful meeting of the minds tonight. Thank you so much, and I look forward to speaking
Melissa,
with all of you again.
Real quickly, Melissa, if you can, get in contact with Donna Wynette, the founder of Families and Friends for Individuals with Mental Illnesses. Donna is doing Donna's doing a lot with the mental illness area. She's been actually trying to get the mental health involved and going in independently to work with the incarcerated. She's been trying to get hospitals, you know, doctors independent to go into the prison. And Donna is she's been a strong advocate for a lot of these things, and she goes to a lot of these meetings, legislative meetings and other. But if you can, get in touch with Donna Wynette, and I'll send you her information. Message you her information so you can connect with her. But she's the founder of Families and Friends for Individuals with Mental Illnesses. And she has her organization, probably can be found on the internet too.
That's awesome. So, I will definitely do that. I'm also going to be reaching out to NAMI about the same thing. I'll share with you guys later. There's some other, like, big connections with that I think will be powerful for each of us that are on board with some kind of national reentry reacclimation program that we the people bring to the surface to help our communities. But I've got to jump off here. I'm so sorry. You guys have a wonderful night, and I look forward to hearing from anybody and anybody with a story, with a drive to help, join, collaborate, information, anything, because 2025, we're all going to be in D.C., and we're going to bring that radical realization and humanization that our people need to make change. You guys have a great night.
Come on, Melissa, if you can come on tomorrow, we're going to be interviewing Andy Williams Jr. again, or We the People. We're going to interview him at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time tomorrow. So if you want to come on, talk about that Washington event that you've been planning, and let's start getting that going, too.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. Andy already said he was on board, and I really wanted to pop in with him. So tomorrow, 5:30, I will set my alarm. All right, guys, have a great night. Look forward to talking to you soon.
You too. Audience, we are now going to be ending this episode. I want to thank Kyle, and I want to thank Melissa for being on, and also Andy, who she has since dropped. But I want to thank all of you for being on, and I look forward to having you all listening in tomorrow. Call in, please, if you will. Call in, ask questions, give feedback, whatever you want to do. Tomorrow, the call-in number will be 657-383-1630. Thank you so much, and thank you both for being on the show with us.
Thank you.